This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Garrettson and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. Forgot to hit the cough button.
Hot mic.
Hot mic didn't. Could have been a lot worse, to be honest with you.
Always can be.
But at least the music's playing loud enough, so maybe you didn't catch it at that point in time. Well, of course, welcome in to another edition of our show. And we do have a little bit of news. Somber news to some of you. Maybe not all of you. Kind of depends on how much you like the show. But tomorrow will be our final edition of The Shift right here on ESPN Kansas City. It's been a lot of fun. We've had a blast going all the way back to, I want to say, August of 2021, I believe it was. So almost 3 years, but not to worry. This isn't like you won't hear me again on the radio. We'll be able to give more details tomorrow, I believe it is. But wanted to give at least a little bit of a heads up that tomorrow, 10 to 11, will be the last time The Shift will be on ESPN Kansas City. You will be able to time to time hear the night shift over on Sports Radio 810 WHP. But as for this station, as for this specific show, Jake and I, this will be it. Or tomorrow will be it. But it's been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of great stories, I believe. There you go. I believe the first segment we ever did was on Mecole Hardman. I think the first segment was, could he be a number two wide receiver? That tells you how long it's been. Mecole Hardman is a number two. Now, we came full circle. Kind of a storybook ending that the last Chiefs game we talked about was Mecole Hardman catching the game-winning pass in the Super Bowl.
The hero.
The hero.
Mecole the hero.
Mecole the hero. But, yeah. Hours and hours of work put into this show. Times we've been strictly sports, times we used to have fun segments. All comes to a close tomorrow. Now, I don't know what we'll have in store tomorrow, how we will say goodbye, what the final segment will be. I'll try to plan it out a little better so we don't have to rush into it tomorrow to close out the show. But again, it's not a complete goodbye to the radio station, just a complete goodbye to this show. But a thank you to everybody along the way. The guests, the producers, Marco and Jake. From time to time, it was Dylan and Jason the Drake Justice. It's been fun. It's been fun. But that's about as heartfelt as I'll get here because we got some stuff to talk about today. Starting with Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos. I think we all felt like this was one of those deals that in the end wasn't going to work out. This was one of those moves that felt very desperate. And even though Denver had made a move, I wouldn't say similar, but somewhat parallel in the past with Peyton Manning. You know, you had a Super Bowl champion quarterback nearing the tail end of his career. He was a big name, and Denver brings him in. He broke historic records, won another Super Bowl. So Denver felt like, hey, we're tired.
But also, nobody in the league wanted Peyton Manning. I mean, because, yeah. I mean, because like
the neck problem.
Yeah, people thought he was a broken Pez dispenser.
And Denver said, all right, we're going to jump the gun on him. Now, Russell Wilson was coming off, I would say, a pretty typical Russ Wilson year. It didn't have 40, 45 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, nothing like that, but he was efficient. And Denver had gone a long period of time with bad quarterback play. Right, just bad. Right, they had who was it? Brock Osweiler. They
went to Cutler, right? After Peyton or Cutler before Peyton?
Cutler was before Peyton.
Gotcha.
But after Peyton, so we're looking at that 2016 year, you had a combination of Osweiler, Paxton Lynch made a couple starts, Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater, Trevor Siemian. It never worked. Nobody they ever threw out there really worked. And when they got to that point in 2021 going into 22, I believe it was, they said, we're tired of it. We're tired of being the doormat to the AFC West, because they had become the doormat. The Raiders had made the playoffs. The Chargers had made the playoffs. Their rival in Kansas City continuously beat them down into a pulp. So they go out there and say, we're tired of subpar quarterback play. We feel like we've got the weapons. We got a good offense, a good defense. We're going to have a good head coach. They went out there and hired an offensive-minded Nathaniel Hackett. And it bombed in year one. I mean, Russell Wilson never had a chance. And I'm not here to be an apologist for Russell Wilson. But once that Broncos Country Let's Ride video came out, it was over. It really was over, because Russell Wilson in Seattle, even though he was cheesy, he had a ring, and he won a lot of games, and he was a part of a mini-dynasty, I would call it, in Seattle, the Legion of Boom. Seattle was one of the more feared teams in the NFC. Think, oh, if the Niners had cashed in on a Super Bowl, we'd be thinking of them the same way we thought about Seattle. So Russ could have been cheesy back then because he was winning. The minute he started losing, oh, the cheesiness really piled on top of it. And people are entitled to act however they want to, and I think Russell Wilson is a really nice guy. Never met him personally, but I think he's a very nice guy, a family man. Seems good with the media, but he's cheesy. You know, it's kind of like the pastor you knew at church. And I'm not saying that because he's a super religious guy, but just a little bit of the goofball energy. You know, standing at midfield, you know, putting his arms to the air when he's back in Seattle, knowing that the camera's on him. Showing up to training camp in his full uniform, or at least wearing his own jersey. When guys are showing up in like tank tops and funny attire, he's wearing his jersey. A little bit self-centered, a little bit goofy. That's what I kind of thought of. Like, you ever go to summer camp and you had like those youth pastors? Like, that's what I compare Russell Wilson to. Like, nice people, fun people, just a little bit goofy, a little cheesy. That's how I thought of Russell Wilson. And in Denver, people got tired of him really quickly. I don't think there was ever a point in time that Denver fully embraced Russ. I think they believed when they made this trade, hey, we don't even need to worry about draft picks. We're ready to win now. We're tired of rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding. We want the quarterback. I don't care what it takes. And teams that get that desperate put themselves in dangerous waters. Very dangerous waters. Because mortgaging your future puts a ton of pressure on the guy you're bringing in. That not only do you have to get us back, you have to get us back to a Super Bowl level. And Russell Wilson was past that point in his career. Russell Wilson thrived in Seattle because the defense for a number of years was elite. He was a good quarterback, don't get me wrong. He put up good numbers. He had a great running back in Marshawn Lynch. He had a great coach. He had great receivers. And you go from Baldwin to Lockett to Metcalf. And there were always those guys they pieced it together with. Oh, wasn't Golden Tate pretty effective for a few years? Jermaine Kearse was effective for a few years. Like, Seattle just pieced it together and was good. Great stability over there. And when he came to Denver, there really wasn't much stability. And he jumped into a division that was, let's be honest, pretty loaded with quarterback play. Patrick Mahomes, of course, top tier, so you're facing the best quarterback in the NFL, and a team that has won that division every single year since, what was it, 2017? So domination when Russell Wilson comes over. And the Chargers are this upstart fun team. Herbert's a great quarterback. They've got great weapons, but they had a garbage head coach. And Denver in year one, I actually thought, had the pieces. They had an awful head coach. Nathaniel Hackett was the most skis over the head type of coach. Just completely way too far in to his liking, I guess I should say. I think he much rather just be a coordinator. A head coach was too much responsibility. He had made all these hirings like game management coaches, would tell him when to call timeouts. Like, it looked like a guy that had been thrown into the fire. And for that matter, you threw Russell Wilson into the fire. He was working with a coach that was very inexperienced and quite frankly didn't know what to do. And Sean Payton highlighted that when he came in. Now, I didn't really agree with it because you don't talk poorly of a guy that went through that, got fired before his first year was even done. That's taking on a lot emotionally. I'm sure that was infuriating that he gets his first crack at a job like Denver and he doesn't even last 10 games. Like, that is the ultimate sign of humiliation. And for Sean Payton to do that, a guy that's won a Super Bowl ring, I didn't necessarily agree with it. But I look at Russell Wilson in this situation, dealing with Nathaniel Hackett, and then everything going wrong. You know, losing games they shouldn't be losing. And then you win six, I believe it was. I think they went 6-11, dead last in the West. And I'm sure Russell Wilson took it to heart that he got one of his coaches fired. You know, it comes back on the players out there on the field performing. The players perform well, their coach is safe. They don't, could be in jeopardy. Then Sean Payton comes in, and Denver does make a run for it. Right when Kansas City was slumping in December, Denver was right behind them. And Denver had a chance on Christmas Day to make things really interesting, and then they lost to the Patriots and Bailey Zappe at home, prime time, under the lights at Mile High. They lose to New England, who's picking top three in the NFL draft. That, to me, was publicly the end of Russell Wilson, because you can't overcome that. That showed that every single year you pick somebody else to dethrone Kansas City, they get an opportunity like this, and they, 9 times out of 10, do not cash in. But we had start to hear, or we had started to hear, those rumblings and those rumors that, you know, Sean Payton wanted to bench Russ so that he could, you know, not be so much of a financial casualty to Denver. And Russ didn't want to do that until it was a little bit late in the season, and they went with Jared Stidham. And for a lot of Chiefs fans, you're not feeling any sympathy. I don't blame you. Now, growing up a Chiefs fan, you hate Denver. You were tortured by John Elway for years. You were tortured by even like subpar Denver teams. And you were tortured by Peyton Manning. So you're probably listening and saying, well, excuse me for not caring one bit about a team that can't figure out their quarterback problem, because Kansas City dealt with that for a number of years. You couldn't find who the right quarterback was. And Denver is going to be searching, and it's even harder now. Way harder now. I mean, the financial toll that Russell Wilson is putting on Denver is catastrophic. Absolutely catastrophic. Here's the numbers. Denver will eat $39 million, but avoid a $37 million guaranteed trigger for the 2025 season that would have taken effect this month. So that's with making this roster move. However, the Broncos will take on $85 million in total dead salary cap over the next 2 years, the largest dead cap hit in NFL history. That is insurmountable, in my opinion. This will go down as the second worst trade maybe in NFL history.
I think it might be the worst.
Where would you rank this next to Deshaun Watson? I think that would be right up there.
Well, I think this is worse because, one, like, his new contract hasn't even really kicked in yet. They're getting rid of him before his contract actually triggers. So, not to mention they gave up two first-round picks, two second-round picks. I think there's another pick involved in there.
Another pick, Locke and Fant.
Yep. And then you paid the guy. And you're not – you got two seasons out of him. You didn't make the playoffs. You know, I think – look, I think the Watson deal is yet to be determined.
You think that the jury – well, I guess the jury still has to be out because he's still there.
Right.
This can't get better.
Right. They're moving on from him. He's done.
Yeah.
But the cap is – the cap hit is ridiculous. Like, the biggest cap hit in the history, right? And then the second and third, it's more than those two combined. Like, if you took the second and third biggest cap hits ever and combined them, they don't even equal this. So, I mean, it's a I think
– absolutely historic.
Yeah. I mean, the other horrible trades that come to mind were, you know, the New Orleans Saints giving up their entire draft – all their draft picks for Ricky Williams. That was a bad one.
That was a really bad one.
But this is crippling. Like, you gave up all that draft capital, and then you sign this guy to a monster deal that's not even being triggered until after you get rid of him. I mean, that, I don't know. I think this is worse than the Deshaun Watson, but also he could still – I mean, he could come back and
– He could.
And have an unbelievable season and take the
– He's young enough,
right,
technically.
Take the Browns to the playoffs and you know, and I mean – That alone would, you know, would cancel this one out.
I just look at how it went down in Denver. And I'm actually one of those people that's not going to say, well, I told you so. It was never going to work. I did think this was going to make Denver competitive. I thought the Broncos were going to be much better than what they showed. But in year one, he goes 4-11.
Well, and yeah, the year one is a nightmare. But also, he got benched, and they still had a chance at the playoffs.
They did. That was the public telltale sign, was when he got officially benched. But this had been in the works, right?
Right. But he also got benched because they didn't want to pay. They didn't want to pay him the, like, they said, hey, well, like, we need to take you to take the guarantees off the table.
Yeah, and he's like, no,
and no. He's like, okay, well, we're. I mean, because the NFLPA investigated it.
Yeah.
I mean, they benched him financially because they wanted him to concede some of that guaranteed money. It was like not happening. They said, okay, well, we don't want any of these incentives to kick in. We're benching you.
It is.
I mean, that's mind-blowing that you still had a chance at the playoffs and you benched. Look, he's better than Jared Stidham. I don't know how you justify that other than, like, I mean, that's just completely waving the white flag.
Stidham won a game, though, didn't he? He beat the Chargers.
The Chargers
the first week.
But I mean, they were in the playoff hunt.
They were. It was that loss to New England was the final straw. It was like, they're not going to get in, and even if we do, we're not going far.
Oh yeah.
I am baffled at the fact that Russell Wilson, from the time he entered the league, so his first year was 2012. He was 24 years old, a little bit more of an aged prospect. He did not have a losing season until his final year in Seattle. And he was hurt, if you can remember that. He was 6-8 as a starter that year. Started in all 14 games he appeared in, but got banged up, if you can remember that. Then back-to-back losing seasons in Denver as a starter. 4-11 in year one, 7-8 in year two. 11-19 overall. He was 104-53-1 in Seattle. I think some people back in 2021 going into 22, I think it was March of 2022 is when that trade went down. People looked at Russell Wilson and said, he's going to be 34. He's past his prime. But a lot of people said, this is the right move at the time for Denver. Felt like they mortgaged a lot of their picks. But we've had multiple conversations on the show before saying, well, picks really only matter if you are hitting on those guys. It's the unknown. If you are a historically bad drafting franchise, getting a bunch of picks may not be the answer. And for Denver, they'd been rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding, and their constant was the quarterback play sucked. They needed stability. They didn't need to wonder anymore, what are we going to get from this quarterback? And then a disastrous coaching hire turned into the biggest trade they had really ever made, not panning out. I'm sure there were Denver fans going, this is going to work out because this is so similar. Maybe not so similar, but somewhat similar to Peyton Manning. Guy at the end of his career had won a ring coming over to Denver. His career was going to reignite on the back half. Only Peyton's went a lot different than Russell's. And now the question becomes, what's next for Russell Wilson? Who brings in Russell Wilson after this? Like, I never thought that he was going to be a quarterback to play into his 40s. But he's only 35. There are still probably 2 or 3 years left of being a starting quarterback, but who takes him after what they saw? Now, last year, I think the numbers were better. In fact, there's no denying that the numbers were better. He had 26 touchdowns, only 8 picks, 66.4 completion percentage, over 3,000 yards, but his season was cut short. He just doesn't air it out anymore. You need very much of a dink-and-dunk conservative offense. Maybe that means Pittsburgh. But how do you look at what happened in Denver and go, he's going to be a fit here? I mean, the financial responsibility for this is just jaw-dropping. As Jake brought up, you know, you could take two of the most expensive dead cap hits and it wouldn't equal what Russell Wilson's is to Denver. And then for Denver's sake, where do you go? Where do you go from this? How do you build the quarterback position again? You are now losing guys to free agency. The defense has gotten astronomically weaker. It was awful last year. And the offense, you're going to start losing those top-end guys. Like, Jerry Jeudy's not really looking like the top pick you used. Cortland Sutton is really, really good, but how much longer is he going to be in Denver? Tim Patrick can't stay healthy. The running back room has guys, but it doesn't matter if your quarterback is so ineffective. And for Denver to punt on this deal, I mean, they kind of had to. If they really wanted to convince the Denver fan base they were changing for the better, it meant not putting Russell Wilson out there for year three. I mean, this falls back on the general manager and the front office making a deal like this. And I'm fascinated to see where Denver goes next. They don't have many picks to mortgage. They don't have much money to spend. Is this a gap year? I mean, how many more gap years do you think Sean Payton wants to take? I think he did a really good job in year one, considering all the stuff that went on. I mean, they were buried 7-8 weeks into the year and then found a way to claw their way back. Started winning some big games. Won in Orchard Park against Buffalo. No, they had beaten Kansas City at Mile High, snapped that streak. But then you get into year two, and that to me is when fan bases get a little impatient. Year one, if you've got success and it gets wiped away in year two, you start to wonder, is this really the answer? And a lot of it's going to come back to quarterback play, and you look at a franchise that didn't really struggle in finding quarterback talent for a number of years, and now they can't buy it. They can't draft it. They can't buy it. They can't develop it. So if it's this draft class, well, how does Denver move up? Who are they going to get? You're not getting Caleb Williams. You're not getting Drake May. You're not getting Jaden Daniels. So the next best option is Michael Penix or J.J. McCarthy. Can you tell me a rookie quarterback is going to make Denver better in year two? Probably not. And even if they found a way to get those transcendent top three talents, a rookie quarterback succeeding with a bad defense and an aging offense is not going to be that productive, in my opinion. Not when you're going up against this division with Patrick Mahomes in it. And that has to be the hair rip-out moment for the Broncos. They can't seriously compete with the Chiefs unless they've got some comparable quarterback to Patrick Mahomes. And that is such a long shot in this league. Think about it in their own division. Justin Herbert, to me, healthy, top five quarterback in the NFL. I really believe that's how good Justin Herbert is. And Justin Herbert doesn't even have a playoff win. And he's got weapons around him. It all has to go so well for you to compete in this division, not just the conference, this division. And even the best ones, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Baltimore, they go back in this circle of they can't beat Kansas City. Now imagine those teams having to play the Chiefs twice a year. Always have to go to Arrowhead. Always have to welcome them to your stadium. I mean, Denver has now put themselves back in this cycle of we're back where we were in 2021. We've got no quarterback. Do we go through the draft? Who the hell are you going to get in free agency? That's better at this point. You don't have the money to get a Kirk Cousins, and I'm not even sure Kirk would work in Denver. I don't think Kirk really wants to leave Minnesota. Not that it's, you know, a given at this point. But who do you turn to? I don't see Baker Mayfield wanting to leave Tampa. He's built something there. Who is it going to be? It can't be a free agent, and I'm just not that high on numbers 4, 5, and 6 in the draft. And Denver's shown us they don't draft quarterbacks that well post 2010. It's been ugly. So for Chiefs fans, Chargers fans, Raiders fans, this is a good day for you. Or maybe bittersweet, because if Russell was still in Denver, you would know you wouldn't have to worry about the Broncos. You wouldn't have to worry one bit. But for Denver, it gives you a fresh start, but also a fresh start that maybe you're not that excited for. You just were here not too long ago. Back in the same spot. We got to get a quarterback. And now you've wasted 2 years and a lot of resources on a guy that didn't work out. Jake, if it was you, who do you roll with now? Do you just consider this a gap year and draft some guy and try to develop it, go with a one-year deal free agent guy? I mean, they've done this now for almost a decade, and none of it has worked out. Where do you go if you're Denver?
Well, I believe they're going to draft somebody and sign somebody. I mean, the guys you're looking at is somebody. I mean, you're talking about a backup. Like, I'm talking about Sam Darnold. Someone. You're right. I mean, that's that's where they're at. That's what they're going to have to do. I mean, I think the top three picks in the draft are going to be three quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think
it feels like a given to me at this point.
Right. So, I mean, I think all three of those teams, the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots, are all three going to take quarterbacks. I don't know what order. I know. I imagine Caleb Williams will be one.
I think he's going to be one, whether it's the Bears or they trade that pick. I think it's kind of a given.
And then the Commanders and the Patriots, they go, you know, the next two, you know.
Drake May and Daniels.
Yeah. I don't know which order, but I think that probably Drake May and then Daniels. I think that's what the top three picks are going to look like. So, like you said, I think at where are they drafting? 12? Is that where the
I think they're in the early teens. Yes.
So, I mean, I think they go get a bottom tier free agent who would be a backup at most places, and then bring in a rookie, and those two will compete. Yeah, I mean, I don't know who they're probably, like you mentioned, McCarthy from, you know, Michigan. I mean, I mean, he impressed a lot of people this weekend at the combine with his arm, allegedly.
Yeah. They get this. They've got 6 picks in the upcoming draft. You were right about 12th overall. They got 6 picks in this upcoming draft. 2 of them are their own. The other 4 were via trade. So they've got the 12th overall pick. They do not have a pick in round 2. They've got their 3rd round pick from the Sean Payton trade. Their 4th round pick is from the Bradley Chubb trade. Their 5th round pick they own. Actually, they have 2 5th round picks. One is from the Marin trade with the Jets. So 2 5s and then 1 6 via the Randy Gregory trade. So 2 that are their own, none in the 2nd. None in the 7th, 2 in the 5th, 1 in the 3rd, 1 in the 4th, 1 in the 6th. How do you move up? If you want one of those top three guys, you would have to mortgage a lot.
Oh, the future.
And they already have. So how are you going to do that? So if you sit back and you go, same game plan we had a couple years ago, which is draft somebody and then try to sign a one-year deal guy and have them learn under it. Like, remember that one kid they took late in, like, the 2000, man, I want to say it was like the 19 or 20 or 21 draft, and then he got, he was on somebody's property intoxicated, and, you know, it was like
the kid from
trespassing. I think it was. Oh, he was the he had some sort of tie to the NFL. So like his dad or his uncle had played, and he had a really good preseason. If you look up Broncos quarterback
Chad Kelly.
There you go. Chad Kelly was kind of that young guy that was slowly flourishing in preseason, and then had this happen. We never heard from him again. So Denver, if they go this route of let's sign a one-year deal guy. Well, they did that with Teddy Bridgewater. They did that with Case Keenum. And it didn't work out. Keenum might have even been a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. So I just don't know where you turn to. How you can convince the Broncos fan base this is the correct path to go. It's unfortunate for them. They had the worst outcome you can have as an NFL franchise. And you may say as an NFL fan, oh, 0-16 is the worst outcome. No, it's not. You get the first overall pick. There's some value in losing 16 games. What's the value in winning 8 or 9 games and missing the playoffs? You were at least competitive and fun for a little bit. Like, to me, it's not as comparable to the NBA or baseball. Like, I think a lot of NBA and baseball fans would tell you if their team missed out on the playoffs for like a game or two, that's still months on end of competitive sport, you could say, competitiveness.
The Lions did well with that, though.
They did.
You know, they finished, you know, 8-9?
It was 8-9 or 7-10.
One game out of the playoffs, and then they came back and they, you know, made it.
Would that be different, though, because they were so tortured with just awful football for decades? Like, Denver, to me, what they did last year, I can't say I would have been thrilled with. It's like we were close, but we've now missed the playoffs.
Well, they're screwed because of the cap. Because
that,
of that
too.
That's crippling.
Maybe Denver's situation is more of a one-off because they weren't this upstart young team. Like, this was their year to do it.
Right.
And they fell short, and now they've got no top pick to show
for.
And
the Lions, they secured
their
quarterback.
They were young. Yeah, they were secure. They secured Goff. They were young. New coach. Sean Payton's new, but he's also been around the league. It's like if Denver was, oh, I don't know, where the Raiders or the Chargers are at, because they're tied up in a lot of money. None of the three teams in the AFC West have a young, upstart, great team. They've all spent a lot of money to try to compete with the Chiefs over the last handful of years. So what they did last year, really in the end, was the worst possible outcome. They weren't good enough to make the playoffs. They weren't bad enough to have a top five pick. In a year where quarterback talent is really flowing in the top three. Outside of that, you're looking at more of a project. We all like Michael Penix. I was high on Michael Penix, and then I saw the championship game, and I went, that is going to be something that sticks in my mind. J.J. McCarthy for Michigan, championship-winning quarterback. I didn't think he was that extraordinarily special.
So I like Penix.
I do as well. I don't think one game should dictate it for me, but like when I look at the top three, I'm like, if Denver had one of those top three, I'd go, okay, you can build around that. Like, Penix, it feels like a lot at the NFL level is going to have to go right building around him, and I don't trust Denver to build around him. They don't have enough to build around him. There is so much financial casualty from this Russell Wilson situation. It's hard to come out of it. And if you want to do a gap year and say, let's sign Josh Dobbs, and just roll with it in year one, and then Penix comes in year two. Well, now you're year three in the Sean Payton era, and you're putting a lot of pressure on a guy who's never been a full-time starter.
Now, I don't like Penix at 12 overall.
No.
I mean, and they don't have a second-round pick. So.
And how do you move up? Like, you can't move up in the first round trading a third-round pick.
No.
It would have to be a
20-25 pick.
Oh, it's a bad spot to be in.
And those teams in the top three aren't moving out.
No, they all need quarterbacks.
Yep.
And if Chicago was to trade out and they say, we love Justin Fields, we'll let somebody else have the first overall pick, it ain't going to be Denver, because Denver doesn't have anything to mortgage to get up there. It's going to be somebody with loads of picks. Loads of picks to move up that are ready to get their franchise quarterback. Denver needs a franchise quarterback, and sadly for them, it might be even longer until they find one. $85 million dead cap hit for Russell Wilson, the biggest in NFL history. Want to make sure I got that right. $85 million, exactly. Total dead salary cap over the next 2 years by releasing Russell Wilson. What's next for the Broncos? We'll find out in April during the NFL draft. We'll take our first break of the show. When we come back, we'll roll on The Shift on ESPN Kansas City. Back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. Little baseball talk. As we near closer to the end of our show today, I really believe that spring training is so random and improbable with injuries that happen. Like, it can happen to anybody. That is baseball to a T. Injuries can happen to just about anybody. And in spring training, it makes it worse, because here's the reality. It's not the real season. It's like getting hurt in the preseason. No, we didn't even get to the start of the regular season, and somebody could be missing the entire year. So it's awful, right? And you can't say, oh, well, you know, that guy just hurt himself. I mean, sometimes there's going to be a guy that collides with the wall. Shouldn't be doing that in spring training. You know, maybe, you know, pushing it too hard on the base paths. But even then, it's like some of these guys are trying to get in game shape. They're going to be going 100% in the regular season, so why not get myself in game shape? But the unfortunate part is you can't control it. That happens in baseball. Arm injuries happen, shoulder injuries, oblique injuries, hamstring injuries. And we're just seeing starting pitchers drop like flies. Justin Verlander goes on the IL. Sonny Gray goes on the IL, or at least they're evaluating him for a hamstring strain. And this one, which has some form of connection to the Royals, is important to bring up. Lucas Giolito, who might have gotten it worse than anybody so far. The early indication is that he's got a partially torn UCL and a flexor strain. The Red Sox gave him $38.5 million over 2 years this offseason. He was one of the hot names on the free agent market. And the reason I bring up the Royals is because he was in the running. Absolutely in the running. The Royals were very interested and Lucas Giolito. He kind of fell in that price range. He was along there with Waka, Lugo, Stroman. Like, those four to me were the ones we heard about the most. Then the Royals made their decision. Giolito, Stroman, a little too expensive. Stroman was wanting more than his qualifying offer, but he didn't even get that. It was just a couple million more than what the Royals wanted to give, and they settled with Seth Lugo with an extra year, but just $15 million, and Michael Walker was around, I think, $16 million it was, $16 to $18 million. So with Giolito, he signs this big contract with Boston. Boston was kind of selling, but it assembled this rotation in a way that could look competitive. And then you have this happen. Maybe going to miss the entire season. And I think back to this Royals offseason and the way they approached it. And why, even with the randomness, you don't know in spring training. Spring training's not over. Now, the Royals could have to endure a couple of injuries to starters. You just don't know. That's the improbableness of baseball. It's not like football where you see a guy get crunched. It's like, oh, he may be out for a while. Baseball could be you see a guy throwing a pitch and then all of a sudden he feels something tug him, pull on him, and that's it. They missed a couple months because the way they're moving their body, they're throwing a baseball, it affects you over and over again. And with Giolito, it was simply just throwing a pitch. And then you feel some tightness, you feel something that's wrong, and they removed him from the game. Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox, said, yeah, we're concerned. And when you hear that, you know it's not very good. But I go back to the Royals offseason and what they were able to do. You say, okay, we need to assemble this rotation. We need to revamp this rotation. But More importantly, we need numbers here. The Royals had three guys in their starting rotation last year, opening day, starting rotation, that are not currently on active rosters. Brad Keller, Zach Greinke are still unsigned. Chris Bubich, 60-day IL. Mac Watreau and the Royals expect him to be back midseason. Three of the guys in the rotation, not even on active rosters. So they go out there, they get Waka, they get Lugo. Both were good for San Diego last year. And sometimes going a little cheaper, but getting you the quantity there, is better than going with the high upside guy where something like this could derail you. Now, Boston did not sign Giolito and go, well, he may get a torn UCL. Yeah, anybody can have that in baseball. But where if the Royals did that and they said, you know what? Let's give Lucas Giolito $20 million a year. Let's do that contract. And then said, Lugo and Waka, not high enough upside. They can't throw you 185, 190 innings. Then this happens, you're screwed. You spent a lot of money on one guy who won't throw a single pitch for you. And the Royals, quite honestly, do not have the starting pitching depth to endure an injury like that to a top-end guy. If Lucas Giolito was the one they'd chosen and passed on Lugo and Waka, well, Giolito would have been their number one. So imagine taking that type of hit to your rotation before the season starts. Now, again, you don't want to point the finger and go, glad it's not me. That only happens to Boston. It can happen to anybody, and a lot of starters right now are falling, or at least having slow starts to spring or feeling some injury. Sonny Gray signed a big deal in St. Louis, hamstring problem. Justin Verlander getting up there in age. But Houston said he's probably not going to be ready by opening day. He's slowly building up where you don't want to rush him. And that's really a very minor case there. But with Giolito, I mean, that is brutal. And that's why with spring training, I get that baseball needs a big buildup, but I've always disliked that spring training's a month long. It gives so many opportunities for things like this to go wrong. And that more so comes from the fan. I'm sure that coaches and players are like, we need this buildup. But you play 162. And so you correlate that and say, if we're going to play for half a year, right? Anyway, 5 to 6 months, sometimes later. Well, I need to be conditioned for that. I can't get conditioned for that in 2 weeks. It's like, though, with the NFL, with the preseason, they dropped it from 4 to 3 games. There's less of a chance for guys to get hurt. It's less wear and tear on their body. You know, we can get to the regular season quicker. And we haven't really seen too many issues yet. I mean, when you think about it, in the NFL, if you win the Super Bowl or get to the Super Bowl, you're playing 20 games. Throw three more on top of that, 23 games of physical contact like that wears you down. For baseball, there's a lot of people that say, we don't need 162 games. We need like 120. And I do love baseball more than anything. It's my favorite sport. But I do understand that point of view of, do you really need 162? Like, there'd be more emphasis on games if you cut that down by 40 games. Now, that's a segment idea, a talking point for another day. You know, it's down the road. We don't need to get into whether 120 or 162 games is better to determine who really is the best team in that division, who all the postseason teams are. But this always sticks in the back of your mind as a baseball fan when you're watching your team. Like, I love to watch spring training. I think it's a great treat to go down to Arizona or Florida, wherever your team is playing, and you watch them for a couple days. It's not, you know, the most exciting because after the third inning, all the starters are out usually, and unless they're getting lengthened out a bit. But, you know, we're entering week two, week three of spring training. Guys are getting more conditioned. At this point, you're like, okay, we know we can't take any stats away from spring training. The wins and losses don't matter. I'm ready for the regular season. But more specifically, you're concerned about injuries. You're concerned about, man, I've been talking myself up how this team can be good, how this team can be a playoff team, but all of those guys have to stay healthy for me to believe that on opening day. And Royals fans had endured that a couple of times. I mean, Lord, go back to 2019. 18 for that matter. Like Salvador Perez ripped up his knee carrying his suitcases upstairs. Like hurt himself there. 2019, remember he gets Tommy John. Like it was the beginning of spring training. The era of Adalberto Mondesi. Always on pins and needles. Can he stay healthy? And I remember 2021, where the Royals had a lot of optimism. They had signed Andrew Benintendi, or traded for Andrew Benintendi, signed Carlos Santana, signed Mike Minor. Had some intriguing guys in the bullpen, and Mondesi was going to be that shortstop to take the keys and run with it. This was before Bobby Witt Jr. And then the last day of spring training, he feels a tug in his oblique. And he misses months on end. Like, that is the scary part about spring training. And back to this Giolito story, it's like every team looks at their starter and goes, boy, every start, I'm excited to see them, but all I care about, more than the numbers, more than the stats, is they just walk off the mound totally fine. You don't see the velo drop. You don't see them shaking their arm out. Like, I was listening to one of the broadcasts last week, and Salvador Perez, you know, had thrown a ball back to the mound, and they're like, oh, he's, you know, rotating his arm. Like, he's grabbing his shoulder. I'm like, oh, no. And I wouldn't do that in a regular season game, because spring training, it's like, well, of course, we're cursed. Our star guys, somebody goes down with an injury. You know, I think the White Sox a couple years back with Eloy Jimenez had put him in the outfield just to get some work, and there was a ball that cleared the fence by 60, 70 feet, and he decided to scale the wall. Scale the wall and reach over for a ball that was never close to being robbed, tore his pectoral. Like, that can happen, and when it's in spring training, it's so much worse. So much worse. It's bad to see. And this Giolito news of having a partially torn UCL, or at least the early indications, a flexor strain, the fact you get two of those, oof. I mean, just from throwing a ball. And that goes back to off-season signings and guaranteed money. Boy, it is a big-time stinger for a franchise when you fork over that type of money. Go, we believe in you. Here's $20 million. And then they can't even make it to opening day. And that's why I look at the Royals. And it's not like they looked at Giolito and said, hey, this is going to happen. Let's go with Lugo and walk it. It's not that. But they took the approach of, instead of breaking bank for one guy, for a Marcus Stroman, for a Jordan Montgomery, for a Blake Snell, for a Lucas Giolito, we're going to go with guys that are a little bit cheaper and we'll have two of them.
And sometimes you have to be lucky, because there are reports out there that they did go after Giolito and they made him an offer.
Yeah, and Giolito probably wanted more, or wanted the better location, wanted the better destination, wanted the team he could believe could compete a little bit more.
And sometimes you just got to be, I mean, that's a stroke of luck.
It is. And that's kind of goes back to the injuries here. It's a perfect comparison. It is luck. You get through spring training healthy, a little bit of luck has to be involved. Because you're building up these guys. It's not like you can go be timid and be like, I'm not going to throw it that hard. I'm barely going to do anything. It's like, no, you have to build yourself up. You have to condition yourself. And that does put your body on the line. Everybody does. And it's a fact of randomness. It can happen to anybody at any point. And that's always the fear I have watching baseball. When you're watching your team, when things are going well, it's like, oh, no. Now you have to deal with this. It just takes the sails or the wind out of your sails. It's a gut punch. I couldn't imagine. I mean, you talk about, you know, it's funny, Jake, when people use the phrase DEFCON 5, they never understand that DEFCON 5 is the least amount of concern. It's DEFCON 1. Don't know why they labeled it that way, but like, I would be DEFCON 1. DEFCON 1. If the Royals had signed Giolito, he was the ace. You're moving in the season with Giolito, Reagans, and Singer, and Lyles, and probably Daniel Lynch. And then you take that hit with Giolito, who could miss the entire year for Boston now. My Lord. Can't get over that. It's one of those things that you can't control. And spring training brings out that anxiety in me. It brings out that anxiety, especially in a year like this for Kansas City. I mean, so much hope put into the team. I mean, Yonder Alonso the other day, former White Sox, former Cleveland Indian at the time, he said that he believes the Royals are going to win this division in the last week of the season. So it's not just Royals fans talking about hope. These are MLB Network analysts, former players, saying that can happen. And if you take that gut punch, it's not the end of the, you still have to play the season.
Like a winning ball club. I haven't seen this energy, this attitude in years here in Kansas City.
Okay.
I think this team is going to win the division.
Whoa. They're going to win the AL Central?
I think they win the division in the last week of the season.
That's Yonder Alonso. Remember him a lot of years in Oakland. Probably remember him with Cleveland, the White Sox. He thinks the Royals are going to win the division. And when you have injuries like that, it can just be the biggest gut punch you can take. Feel for Boston. Feel for Giolito. Still hope there's some way. It's not the end of the year. Just with things like this, it points to that. Well, there is Ray Charles. It's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. Our final edition of The Shift tomorrow at 10 a.m. We will talk to you then, Kansas City. I'll have to pack my things and go. That's right, hit the road.